The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Cordasco. I hope everybody's safe and faring well. I appreciate you joining us today. I thought that it would be good timing to just to pull us all together and take some time today to talk about what's happening to our country, the election. Joining me in Chicago will be our friends from DeMayo Schneider. We work closely with them to navigate our investment strategy. And so we welcome our friends there. Joe Cortese, thanks for joining us, part of the Cordasco Financial Network family.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. And I thank everyone on the call today and the meeting today for their time, giving us an opportunity to talk a little bit about what we're doing behind the scenes. Really appreciate that. But you're absolutely right. So just to orient folks, and some may or may not know this, those that have listened to our conversations in the past, but our portfolio construction framework operates on an annual cadence. And that means that, you know, toward the end of every year, and this work is going on in earnest as we speak, our capital markets team, along with the 50 or so investment analysts that we have, you know, they're working behind the scenes to update our forecasts or our forward-looking assumptions for return, risk, and correlation for all of the asset classes that we include in portfolios. And they're taking into consideration, you know, things that have to do with the political environment that we're in today. I would argue that what's really more important is, you know, what's going on with the economy and frankly, monetary policy. If you look historically, monetary policy has had a greater impact on market returns than political climate and environment. But taking all of those factors into consideration as we update our outlook, as we update the assumptions that go into our models, and we will come back to our friends at Cordasco at the beginning of next year with our updated thoughts on what we need to do in portfolios to ensure that we're positioned correctly for, you know, 2021. And then that process starts again at the end of that year and goes on and on. Now, we would just mention that this year, 2020, has been very unique. And I think some of you probably know, we've actually had three updates to our typically annual process this year, given what has happened with COVID and how the markets changed earlier in the year. So this has been a very unique year, frankly, unprecedented. I don't know that next year will be like that. If we have a more normal year, we won't have intra-year updates to our strategic framework. But the point of all of it is yes, we're considering all of these things, we're studying it, we're analyzing it, running it through our process. And these events that are going on today will inform our portfolio construction process in 2021.
We can safely say we're probably going to see a lot of volatility between now and mid-December.
I think it's fair to say we would expect volatility to increase. It's been interesting how well the markets have done this week, frankly. You've had a pretty strong rally across the board in risk assets. And in fact, U.S. large cap equity is now up over 8% year to date. So again, take that into context. Like, think about where we were in March, where these markets were down over 20% and down 30% from their last high in September. And now we've come full circle and we're now up 8% for the year on U.S. large cap equities, right? So while there can be volatility at the end of the year, or volatility may or may not increase, my opinion is that I think it will increase the longer that this election drags on and as uncertainty here grows. But, you know, we have eliminated some sources of uncertainty as well, right? Like, we got through the election, it happened. We don't know the results yet, but, you know, it was at least some of the things that people talked about that could happen around the election didn't, from a negative standpoint. We got through it. And you've seen a really good week in risk assets this week. So we'll see how it plays out the rest of the year. But I think safe to say, if it drags on, we will see an increase in volatility. Yes.
Now, we try not to do too much short-term playing things cute. There are a number of other financial advisory firms who I sort of participate with, right? We all talk to each other, you know, what are, even though we compete with each other, the owners of those companies and myself tend to get together from time to time and just talk about strategy planning. There were a number of firms, and I found surprisingly, building defensive positions. They were buying ETFs that if the market goes down, they do well. They're called short position ETFs or inverse related ETFs, which means you're betting the market's going down. They were buying them as hedges. As of midday yesterday, they were pulling their hair out saying, I can't believe that this is happening, meaning the market's moving up in the face of the results that are coming in politically. So it caught many by surprise. We elected not to, and it was a hard decision, not to get caught up in trying to predict or time things. So that right now is boding well for us. Here's the issue I'm having right now that I'd like to talk about. I believe in value investing. I think there's tremendous amount of companies out there that are good quality companies that have not seen their stock performance do as well as a Facebook, an Amazon, the FANGs, Netflix, all, you know, these companies that are tech-centric, the Twitters, that are driving the broader market. So me liking dividends and value style, I'm excited about that space. But now what we're hearing is that if Biden's elected and he is allowed to get some traction with what his new tax structure would be on corporate America, where do we navigate from a stock standpoint, knowing that value-oriented stocks, those funds that don't have the Amazons, the Facebooks, the Googles, those high flyers in here, how much will that increased tax burden that Biden and those that are trying to get him elected want to see happen, will value still have a tough time over the next 4 years based on the corporate tax structure?
Potentially, yeah. And it's one of the reasons why we, you know, we don't necessarily within portfolios bet on value versus growth or one way or the other, and why we prefer to take a more broad-based approach. We'll benefit if value does well, we'll benefit if growth continues to do well. And we prefer not to try to time that. There's so many variables there to consider. First of all, if, you know, I mean, again, we don't know the outcome. It looks like, you know, if I say, okay, what do I think is going to happen? I think probably Biden will end up becoming the president-elect. I think the Senate will remain in Republican control, and I think the House will remain in Democratic control. So you're left with divided government, which frankly is probably the best solution in all of this for investors, right? Because it means the potential for a Biden administration to do something radical on the tax side is substantially diminished. It won't make it through the Senate, which would be good from that standpoint. And then again, I go back to, you know, the notion that monetary policy is probably more important here. And remember, the Fed has enacted up to this point, you know, $2 or $3 trillion in aid, or has promised $2 to $3 trillion in aid. We've only implemented 25 to 30% of that aid that's been promised. So there's still a massive amount of liquidity that the Fed has promised that will likely work its way into markets over the next few years here. And so, you know, even if you talk about, you know, would a increase in the corporate tax rate hurt the economy and companies, possibly. But that doesn't necessarily mean that markets have to go down, particularly when you consider the promise of aid that the Fed has said. And so it's really hard to handicap that. There's so many variables that go into it. And that's why we prefer to take a broad-based approach.
Next question has to go with energy. Joe, as you know, we've had energy positions in the portfolio, MLPs that has a lot of people talking about the dividend. Will it hold up? Energy has been a pain point for some in their portfolio. So a question has come in today asking about green hydrogen and green energy investing. Would we be shifting from from some of the investment selections in energy from what some would call traditional energy, or if you're on the left side of the aisle, dirty energy versus green and cleaner energy?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And as I mentioned, there's a couple major themes that we're closely studying. How we access real assets and energy is one of them. I mentioned a little bit about the fixed income side. We can talk about that later as well. But yes, the research team is working very diligently evaluating how we're accessing real assets and particularly energy investments today. And what we're evaluating is do we need to take a more broad-based approach on the real asset side for a few reasons. One, again, back to monetary policy, tremendous amount of stimulus that's been promised, some of which has already worked its way into the system. You're starting to see the dollar weaken a little bit, which could indicate that some of that, liquidity is finally starting to work its way into the system. But while inflation is very low today, you continue to add dollars to the supply, the existing supply of dollars, sort of economics 101, right? More supply, stable demand, prices are going to go down, dollars are going to go down. Inflation could accelerate here. We don't think it's a near-term issue this year, probably 2021, but we think 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, we're likely going to have to deal with some above trend inflation, given what's happening on the monetary policy side today. And that has implications on the real asset side, and particularly with energy. So we're looking at, do we take a more broad-based approach as opposed to just having a dedicated allocation to midstream energy today? Do we take a multi-asset class approach on the real asset side? Have traditional energy, new energy, commodities, natural resources, other types of things that are real asset based that have exposure to the inflation cycle, and so that's going to impact that potentially. The other thing I would say is to the question specifically, we have exposure to these companies that are developing new energy solutions, right, through just our traditional equity exposure. You think about companies like the largest energy producers out there, some of the other companies that in that energy space. They are all working on new energy products. And also keep this in mind, if some technology springs up, they're gonna compete in these markets as well. So we don't think it's necessarily a situation where you go out and buy investments that are specific to green energy and alternative energy. It's still only a small part of our overall energy generation. And we're not gonna be able to get away from fossil fuels anytime soon. But we do indirectly have exposure to those types of things through other areas of the portfolio.
Some of these questions might need Tim, Joseph, or Jim Tate, who I know are participating in today's call as well. This one comes from Rod. I've heard a report that Biden, if he wins, will propose increasing the cap gains to almost 40%. Presently, it's 20%, I believe. If the increase would happen, what is the strategy to control paying the increase in these taxes that would evidently impact us on our income taxes in the future? Jim Tate, if you're available, you might want to jump in.
The first thing is the increases for capital gains would only put the tax rates up to ordinary rates. It wouldn't actually put them automatically to this 40%+ basis. So in many cases, if your tax rate is 22%, you're not looking at 40% for your capital gains. You don't have any capital gain income until you sell something. So we would not be looking to sell in that environment, generally speaking, people that are in those higher tax brackets. So if it looks like it could get through Congress, we would literally be saying maybe we'll have a window this year, but we would also be looking, as we always do, and saying, what is the window looking forward? There's nothing that compels us to look liquidate positions that are at big gains in a for a particular person who has high income. Generally, they don't really, they're not pressed to have liquidations. So, and in the case of people who might say, well, I need liquidations because I need the cash flow, those people are generally in lower tax brackets. And literally, if you're in the, if you're below that 22% tax bracket, there is zero tax on capital gains. And Biden has assured us that anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year isn't going to be getting any tax increases.
Another question. For those of us who have been sitting in cash in our 401k plans and maybe with some funds at Cardasco, waiting for the election to resolve, what strategy do you recommend related to deploying that cash today?
What we would say to those that currently have, you know, meaningful cash balances that they can invest is it should be invested. And clearly, if you're in cash, whether it's in your 401k or otherwise, I mean, that money is, the purchasing power of that money is being eroded because there is some inflation. It's not zero. So absolutely, you have to get invested to protect the purchasing power and then grow those assets at a reasonable rate. And we would say, look, we would keep it simple, and we always keep it simple on the implementation side. There's no great science about, you know, timing implementation into the market. We would say do some now immediately. Yes, markets have run up, but they can continue to run up. Do some now, maybe a third, maybe a half of that balance, and then space out the rest. Do another tranche in a month, and then do the final tranche at the beginning of next year in January. But the goal would be get invested as soon as reasonably possible, because we know over time the asset allocation will do the work for us, and we'll be able to grow those assets at a reasonable rate, and we'll do it with as little volatility as possible.
Here's a question from Nancy. It's times like these that make one think about annuities and whether one should invest in a guaranteed annuity rather than the markets. Can you talk about this? Annuities can play a part in a diversified approach. It's not about the time we're in. If you're thinking about an annuity only because of the time we're in, or if you're getting sucked into a soundbite in a commercial, or you received a flyer in the mail saying annuities, or you're being lured into somebody being able to get you emotionally worked up because of the uncertainty of an election, and that gets you more scared about your money, it makes it easier for them to sell you an annuity. An annuity should never be purchased or invested in because you're emotional or scared about something. An annuity should be used as any other investment vehicle or tool as part of your total investment package, as your total diversification of how you invest. So it's more about whether an annuity fits what you need your money to do for you, but more importantly, the type of life you need to lead in perpetuity here and where your money's positioned to do that for you. So it's more about the solution and will an annuity achieve what you want it to do for you? That's my approach to annuities. Are they bad? No. No, they're not bad. They wouldn't be around if they were bad. Are they for everyone? No, they're not for everyone. Do insurance people make you think they're for everyone? Yes. Why? Because that's how they earn a living. Being a fiduciary, and that's what we are at Cardasco Financial Network, we're obligated by the law to put your interest first. So it's not about will an annuity be best for Steve Cardasco or Jim Tate or Tim Joseph or Desiree Real or Gil Freeman or Ryan Floor. It's about will the annuity be best for you and what you want your money to do for you. And because we're not a one-trick pony and we're a fiduciary and can invest everywhere you would want us to invest or anywhere that we can go with your money, as RIAs, we can do that. our job is to determine whether there's a fit for an annuity based on what type of life you want to lead and what you want your money to do for you within that life. Okay, another question. With all the turbulence and unknowns, but it appears a Biden victory is coming, there's a lot of information or misinformation flowing on the airwaves. If Biden's elected, are you anticipating or concerned with the following? Number one, does he plan on taxing the value of our homes? This would be above and beyond the property tax. Some reports, and I don't know where they're getting this reports, say that up to 3% of your home value, if you're above a certain type of income or you're in a zip code that's not diverse, you'll be hit with a 3% property tax. Jim?
The notion that generally taxes are on income, not on assets. So it would be a pretty heavy lift to make it so that your existing assets are going to be taxed at a percentage, whether a one-time or an annual basis. Secondly, we do have these assurances that that isn't going to happen, and generally to people's homes. So assets that they tend to want to say is wealth is not usually your farm or your home. Even for property taxes, usually there's some kind of equation for when did you buy it and how much did you pay for it, as opposed to just its strict market value. So it's very difficult to expect that anyone would say, I want some of your liquid investments, your cash, to pay for positions that you have in your illiquid investments.
Okay, another question. Inflation. Has all this stimulus created some inflation in the system? What's the future of gold and what's the future of bonds?
We expect inflation to remain benign, at least in the near term. All the indicators that we're looking at are corroborating that. But we think it's going to be something that we're going to have to pay increasing attention to. And it could be, and again, down the road, we're likely to see above trend inflation. One of the things that we watch really closely is the velocity of money. It's a metric that the Fed publishes. And it's really hard to have inflation when the velocity of money is down. Velocity of money is just a measure of how much money and how quickly money is moving around the economy. And it's an indicator of general economic activity. When velocity of money is down or decreasing, it's virtually impossible to have, meaningful inflation. And that's kind of the environment that we're in today, particularly as a result of COVID and those sorts of things. But as we've said, the Fed has promised, massive liquidity and stimulus and aid. It's going to work its way into the system over time. And as velocity of money picks up, as the economy heals and velocity of money picks up, and then you've got additional supply of money in the system, that's when we're likely to see some increasing inflation, and we'll have to deal with it. But again, we are looking at it very closely today and thinking about and studying how it's going to impact portfolio construction. Things like gold, we would look at it less in terms of like how is gold going to do versus how is a broad basket of commodities going to do, or a broad basket of inflation-linked type of assets going to do, and they would benefit in a period like that. And so we're looking and studying how we should position portfolios to potentially take advantage of that if it comes to pass at some point in the intermediate term future, let's call it.
Last question, and this one comes in from Peter. Do REITs specializing in residential use, such as apartment buildings, assisted care facilities, et cetera, but without office space, retail space make much more sense in providing yields? And do they have more favorable tax treatments? So as you know, Joe, we have REITs right in the portfolio. REITs, for those who might not know what they are, REIT stands for Real Estate Investment Trust, which means it's made up of a bunch of real estate, and then you get paid dividends on that investment, right? It could be a mutual fund that's got all kinds of real estate in it. What type of REITs will we likely be positioning to? And what seems to be the better place to be within REITs? Because who's going to want commercial real estate if the workforce is changing on how they're working?
Yeah, it's evolving very quickly. We forecasted overall about a 25% distribution cut in REITs and real estate in recognition of the difficulties that are happening there. You can see that that space is still under pressure. It's down about 17% still overall year to date. But I wouldn't, first of all, one, there are areas within real estate that are doing very, very well. One is industrial. With the acceleration of e-commerce and, you know, the move to online shopping and grocery delivery, things like that, you need much more warehousing space. And so industrial is doing really, really well. The other area that's doing really, really well is data centers. So as the, you know, as more commerce moves online, those sorts of things, you need to be able to support that. And data center REITs are doing really, really well. You're seeing things like cell phone tower REITs also doing really, really well. You know, so it's really hard to make a vast generalization about an area of the market that's relatively large in size, real estate. The other thing I would point out is don't underestimate the ability to adapt and adapt maybe faster than people think. Yes, office real estate is under pressure today, but look, a lot of that space can be converted to residential, can be converted to things like condos and things like that if necessary. Within retail, definitely underwater, definitely struggling today given the, you know, given what's going on and the move to online and e-commerce, but you're seeing some of these large retail locations being repurposed. You know, the sort of the anchor tenant stores and large malls that, you know, were that currently that used to have the big you know, large retailers in them, those are being changed over to experiential type things, you know, like help big health club types scenarios, and even things like indoor amusement parks, things like that. That's happening. It's happening quicker than many people realize. So
it really is. Yep.
Yeah. I would not get too caught up in you know, office is dead. The great thing about our economy and frankly, our system is we can adapt much quicker than anyone else. And so you will see that adaptation take place within real estate, generally speaking.
Let me end with this. If you're above that $400,000 income mark and you think Joe Biden's going to win and it's going to be a blue sweep and you're north of $1 million, because there's two thresholds here, right? North of $1 million, that means your capital gains is going to go to your income tax bracket, which means $400,000 and up of income, you're going to be back at the 39.5%. And if you're in New Jersey, you're probably paying closer to 50% all in. And then if you got a capital gain, you're paying a big chunk of that. If you're selling a business, you might have to give almost half of it to the government if you're above the $400,000 or $1 million, right? So where do you go? What do you do if you're in that particular group, if you're part of that really wealthy real estate? And not investing in somebody else's real estate deal. You might need to invest in your own real estate deal. Put your own type of real estate portfolio together. I've already helped many of you with this. And those of you that are on the call right now know who you are. And you know that I'm trying to get you to actively be part of that real estate investment, not passive, because that's where you'll get most of the tax savings. When it comes to bonds, forget taxable. You got to be in the municipal bond space. Annuities. Annuities tended to be recommended to those that were more concerned about losing what they have, worried whether they had enough money, more of those that were considered middle class, those that were not high income earners, tended to be annuity people. Guess what? Those of you that are high wealth, you might want to now take a look at annuities, and not just off the shelf annuities. You might want to look at some of the private placement ones that you put together with other groups of investors like you. And we'll talk to you about that as we see more shape out, as I'm pointing to my screens over here, giving me a minute by minute playbook of what's happening. Lastly, deferred compensation. Many of you might have to use some of your company programs to help you better pace how your income flow comes in. Deferred compensation can help with that. Your retirement vehicles can help with that. Our team can help you with that. Please come to us. We'll help you navigate that. Joe, from a bond standpoint, where should people be investing in bonds and what strategies are we doing right now for the bond part? Last Friday was a pretty scary day. Bonds took it on the chin, yield spiked, the market was down. And I thought, oh my gosh, here we go. Deja vu of two Decembers ago when it was the worst investment month of my lifetime in 35 years. That's because both stocks and bonds were down big.
Yeah, it's an area, it's the second area, the big theme that we're really studying very, very closely given the ultra low interest rate environment. And we're looking at things like, well, first of all, let me say, we take a broad based approach to bonds, just like we do the rest of the portfolio. And we have exposure to many different types of bonds, treasury securities, agency securities, corporate securities, high yield securities, international bonds, emerging, you know, broad based exposure again. So we don't have all of our eggs in one basket on the bond side of the portfolio. We are looking at ways that we might need to adjust our exposure on the bond side, given ultra low interest rates and the prospect for rates to remain low over time. We may start to change around the exposure in bonds to have less reliance on duration or interest rate risk and interest rate sensitivity and adopt more of a credit risk centric approach, or focusing more on, you know, the credit worthiness of an underlying obligor versus the maturity of the bond, those sorts of things. And that may inform how we approach the bond space early next year. We're also looking at, you know, potentially adopting a more global bond approach versus, you know, having dedicated exposure to developed international and dedicated exposure to to emerging market bonds. We may look at a solution that's more globally based and allow a manager with resources around the world to be a little bit more tactical in how they implement that part of the portfolio as well. So we're looking at it all right now very, very closely, and we'll likely have some updates there at the beginning of next year.
Stocks. You keep hearing the stock market's overvalued. It's trading at 26 times. It should be at 16 times. It went to 22 times, should be 17 times earnings. We can get all caught up in that. Here's my view on stocks. Just like Joe just said, hey, international bonds could be a place to go due to political change. Same thing in the stock space. You're probably going to see, if what you're watching right now on TV, if those maps stay the way they were between blue and red, and it looks like there's change of leadership, look for stocks to shift a little bit from U.S. growth being overly concentrated at Cardasco to more international concentration and more value concentration, because value stocks have not done well if you look at them compared to growth, right, Joe? And so that rotation can create some opportunity, and we might move out of all that overvalued space into spaces that's got better valuation. And here's something to kind of leave us with. I watched the NASDAQ very closely. So back in March, when it looked like the world was coming to an end, the market was down thousands of points. Remember the last time we did these webinars? It was on the heels of 1,000-point swings in the market. It had many, many people worked up. So with that said, if you followed the NASDAQ took off like a rocket ship. It tended to lead. It did the same thing after 9/11. It did the same thing after the financial collapse. So it's almost like the NASDAQ's the canary in the coal mine. It's giving us that early indication of what's next. I view emerging markets the same way. International emerging markets on the equity side, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, are shining right now. There's something going on globally that's saying it looks like money could start to go that way. Do I think it has to do with a political backdrop here in the U.S.? You're darn right I do. I think it's a factor in there that U.S. stocks, the ones that have really won the day over the last 4 years under the current political environment, a shift looks like it could be taking place to more international investing, with the canary in the coal mine being the emerging market. So we're going to wait. We're going to watch. But I want everybody to know we're doing a lot of work to know that we might not have a lot of weeks here at the end of the year to get done what needs to get done, but we're going to get it done. We're hoping we get a better picture of results here before mid-December. If not, we're going to be working till midnight and we're going to be in at 6 a.m. because we're going to have a lot of repositioning and transactions to do so that we're not doing it in 2021 for that group of you that are above the $400,000 income level or making some type of move, selling a capital gain because you're above a million. Those of you below that, look to see more international bonds, more diversification in your bond portfolio, and more international and value type of stocks in the stock side of the equation. So hopefully we painted a picture that can give you a little bit more clarity based on where we are today. Joe, any last minute thoughts?
I think we've covered a lot of ground. I just really appreciate the opportunity to be here and share our thoughts and the work we're doing behind the scenes to support you all at Cordasco.
Hey, Jim.
Of course, everyone can always reach out to us anything that wasn't clear or they're looking for more information on.
And I promise we'll be doing a gold podcast soon. So I know some of you said, hey, what about gold? But frankly, we didn't get any gold questions. So whoever brought that gold question and it came in a little bit late, we'll get to that. You know, place for gold in a portfolio, but will we be going 100% gold or 50% gold? No, never. It just doesn't work that way. We would really cause you a lot of pain and agony if we did that. Really, thank you so much. As you know, our phone lines are open. You can always email me, asksteve@cfnplan.com. Thank you to everyone who has given us feedback. Please stay safe. And any questions, forward to me at asksteve@cfnplan.com. Thank you very much.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com.